south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
Okay, now, remember on the last show, I was trying to explain all the craziness and the political shenanigans that are going on in Guatemala, mentioning that the vice president was now in jail and that the president was about to have his immunity stripped. So he could go to trial too, since a huge corruption ring was discovered that worked its way all the way from the presidency on down through the vice president, on through the presidential cabinet, most of whom resigned and fled the country in the last few weeks. The corruption scheme called La Red, or The Line, because it was a line leading directly from the president all the way down to the port authorities. That's the shipping ports where all the taxes for the country are collected on imports and exports. That's where the skimming took place, up to $5 million a week. Now, Guatemalan government legal authorities did not report this nor discover it. Why would they? They've been involved in it. It was discovered by an independent committee composed of judges and investigators from various first world countries who've been working independently in the country for 9 years now. And this time, miracle of miracles, they have the proof. Recorded phone conversation, over 80 of them, talking about how they steal the money and how they divvy it up. Now, the first person in line is the president, then it's the vice president, second person, and the third person in line, the guy that made almost all those phone calls, was the personal secretary to the vice president, who is also a fugitive from justice right now. You might recall from last week's show that I mentioned when the cops went into this guy's house, the personal secretary to the vice president, they discovered $3 or maybe it was $5 million in cash stuffed in his living room sofa. Which, because this is Latin America, can only mean it was probably $5 or $10 million and the cops only reported half of the take. I mean, hell, they gotta eat too, right? Anyway, since my Friday show just 2 days ago, there's been more breaking news yet. The president of Guatemala, Otto Perez Molina, has resigned his office, which is totally contrary to what he's been saying. Before he resigned on Wednesday, he's been saying in interviews and on the nightly news, and naturally on Twitter and Facebook, that he will never resign. He says, quote, "I've never taken one single cent from that criminal organization known as La Linea," unquote. And of course, technically, he's correct. He never took 1 cent. He took more like $30 million. That's what investigators are reporting. Sounds like he's taking a page right out of Clinton's testimony in the Lewinsky trials, huh? "I never had sex with that woman." So what did Otto Perez do? Well, Wednesday at 3 in the morning, he resigned his presidency. Now, the question people are asking is this. If the guy was so adamant in not resigning, I mean, he's been saying that for months, remember? Why did he do it now? Here's what happened. You see, all Latin American politicians are corrupt. And at the highest levels, president, vice president, cabinet members, and senators, you can't rise to those levels without being not only corrupt, but a psychopath. We knew that already, so are first world politicians. Even so, some are vastly more corrupt than others. And as long as a politician is not so gluttonous as to wipe out the entire treasury, the Latin public will simply go about its business and tolerate it. As long as their currency and inflation remain relatively stable, sure, the public will complain that their politicians are all thieves, but they won't make a big stink, hit the streets and riot. To them, it's just business as usual. However, when the thieving becomes excessive and just, well, simply intolerable, and the system starts breaking down, when the roads are crap and the water supply is totally polluted, the hospital's so underfunded that they have no medicine and the people are actually dying in the hallways, when the straw finally breaks the camel's back, even a thoroughly corrupt Congress can be pressured by internal and external forces to impeach their own, even a president or vice president. So eventually there does come a time, even in thoroughly corrupt Latin countries, where no scapegoat will do. There'll be no Barabbas. For example, the last time a Guatemalan president was impeached was back in the 90s. His name was Serrano. But surprise, surprise, before he went to jail. He escaped to, guess where? Panama, and is now living the life of a king down there. And you might ask, well, why would Panama accept such a high-profile fugitive, fully knowing that if he was ever extradited back to Guatemala, he'd go to prison for life? Then you have to ask what kind of diplomatic problems that would cause between these two countries, too. Well, as it turns out, in all Latin American countries, including Panama, there are laws and there are laws. The common and poor people are treated much differently than oligarchs and high-level politicians. Ring a bell? Sound a bit like Club Fed? Well, it's even better than that. Serrano never went to jail in Panama. Instead, he made a deal with the government way before his trial in Guatemala, anticipating he would get thrown in the slammer for life. He promised Panama he'd be a good boy and bring in all his millions and create a lot of jobs, which is just what he did. So he's been there since the mid-90s, living like a sultan. Oh, and by the way, two of Panama's past presidents are either in jail or under indictment right now, too, so Guatemala's impeachment case is not all that unusual. It just happens to be in the news right now. So why am I bringing up this fugitive thieving ex-president of Guatemala, Serrano, who, by the way, now owns dozens of businesses and thousands of acres of land in Panama, and guess where else? Go ahead, you'll never guess. Time's up. He's bought large tracts of land and commercial property in and around Miami. Yes, Miami. So you gotta wonder, how'd that happen and why'd the U.S. let him get away with that? Well, again, it's all about the money, right? But still, I don't get it. If you and I tried to take $3,000 out of the bank or transfer maybe $5,000 or $6,000 out of the country, the bank gives us the third degree and we get on all the alphabet agency poop lists. Yet, an impeached presidential thief can steal millions from his country and start buying up chunks of my jammy. That's okay, right? But I digress as usual. Anyway, just about 3 or 4 days ago, this fugitive ex-president, Serrano, made some statements to the Panama press, because obviously he's down there. They're going to try to get his opinion on what's happening in Guatemala, right? Now remember, this is still when the Guatemalan president, Otto Perez, said he would never resign. Anyway, a few days ago, in a press conference in Panama, ex-fugitive president Serrano told the press that when he was president in the 90s, Otto Perez, president of Guatemala right now, was his minister of defense. Now, you might not recall, but the president of Guatemala, Otto Perez, was a general in the army who made, by the way, at his peak earning power, $15,000 a year as a general. Anyway, former president fugitive Serrano said to the Panama press just the other day that Otto Perez, when he was his minister of defense, was, with President Serrano's knowledge, running an extortion scheme at the port, just like the very scheme he's being accused of operating right now. So, Serrano says he's been collecting on this scheme not for 4 or 5 years as president, but it goes all the way back to the mid-90s. Now, of course, everybody knows that ex-president Serrano, the fugitive, is a crook. Now he's saying Otto Perez was one of his boys. And oddly enough, right after that Panamanian press conference, just a few hours later, in fact, at 3 in the morning, President Otto Perez of Guatemala resigned the presidency. So both him and his son just might be sharing the same jail cell, his son being the corrupt mayor of the second biggest city in Guatemala. You know, the ex-lieutenant in the military who likes to collect $100,000 Maseratis. And hopefully they'll throw away the key. Now, what makes this even more interesting is the fact that the fugitive former president that's living like a king in Panama right now, guess who his niece is? None other than Baldetti, the woman former vice president of Guatemala who's in jail right now. She was the second in charge of that $5 million a week corruption ring. Yep, just like the Clintons and the Bushes and the Kennedys, politics is incest. It's all in the family. And you know, by coincidence, the presidential elections are coming up in Guatemala just this week. They'll be selecting some more corrupt asswipe thieves for another 4 years. And if you're inclined to give these new candidates a pass or the benefit of the doubt, let me give you the rundown on the top 3 presidential contenders. The first one is a self-proclaimed evangelic Christian preacher who's been described by insiders as a sociopathic megalomaniac. In fact, a gringo teacher friend of mine told me that this guy's kid goes to a helicopter school, of course. And when my friend, the gringo teacher, tried to fail his kid, there was a parent-teacher conference, The candidate did not scold or discipline his kid. Instead, he demanded they fire the gringo teacher. How dare he try to fail his kid, huh? Then, a few months ago, on the front page of all the local newspapers, it was discovered that this same holy Christian candidate had plagiarized his PhD thesis. But never mind, he's still on top of the polls. Okay, that's the front-running candidate. Number two, a longtime corrupt congresswoman who's got the nickname the Man-Eater. Why? Because she's only about 45 and she's been married four, or is it five times? Can't remember. One marriage, believe it or not, to a corrupt former U.S. congressman. His name is Jerry Weller. Look it up. Now get this. When he was congressman, he was labeled by a group called Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington as one of the 22 most corrupt members of the U.S. Congress. By the way, her father is an ex-Guatemalan dictator, a former general who's under indictment for genocide committed during that 35-year war. Oh, and get this, her brother Enrique, former chief of the Army General Staff in Guatemala, was charged with embezzling millions from the Guatemalan military, and he's been a fugitive living on a beach in a four-star hotel somewhere since around 2005. And his sister is presidential hopeful number two. And presidential candidate number three, the wife of another Guatemalan ex-president. She's the one who, not so secretly, owns a huge chain of used clothing stores throughout Central America. And by strange coincidence, the items in those stores just happen to be the clothing that nice first world people donate to charities like Salvation Army, St. Vincent de Paul Goodwill, and others. So while clueless Americans think they're donating to a good cause, it's lining the pockets of, well, people like her. Oh, and by the way, her sister, a high-level government functionary, and her sister's two daughters, who also work for the government, are facing jail time right now for malfeasance and misappropriation of government funds. Big surprise, huh? And again, coincidentally, Sunday will be the new presidential election. So, as Pete Townsend put it so concisely, meet the new boss, same as the old boss. So there you have the good, the bad, and the mostly ugly about what's happening in Guatemala right now. And the reason why I'm bringing it up at all is because I've got a lot of emails lately saying, hey, explain it to us. Why is Guatemala in the news all of a sudden? Why are tens of thousands of people in the streets saying, kick those maggots out? Well, they kicked out the president and the vice president, and guess what? It's been 100% peaceful, no violence at all. Oh, and by the way, when the new group of bloodsuckers gets in after the next election, they will tread very lightly indeed. Meaning they'll steal a lot less. So there will be social and infrastructure improvements in the country like you've never seen before. Why? Because the new scumbags will stick their snouts in the public trough with great reluctance. Then, 4 years from now, when the next group of scumbags gets in, it'll be business as usual. As the bard once said, a colostomy bag by any other name would smell as sweet. Or was it expat Eddie who said that? Can't remember. Oh, and by the way, about a year and a half ago at one of my expat wisdom seminars, we were doing a boots-on-the-ground real estate run, and people wanted to see the very high end of real estate in Guatemala City. And so we drove our two little vans into a very exclusive subdivision in an area called Zone 15. There, we made a stop in front of the president's personal residence, his house. I believe at the time the house was worth maybe $3 to $5 million. At that time, the president had been in office 2 years. Bringing down about $150,000 US a year. And before that, he was a general in the Guatemalan army, bringing down maximum $15,000 or $16,000 a year. Then the question came up, how could he afford a house like that? To which our seminar coordinator explained that it was only one of three multi-million dollar houses that the ex-general, now president, owned. Then our seminar coordinator lady said, that particular house happened to be a gift to the president from an international pharmaceutical company. Then one of our expat guys said, isn't that illegal, donating stuff like that to a president? To which our seminar lawyer in the group said, no, there's no law against that down here in Latin America. In fact, you can donate as much as you want and spend as much as you want on any campaign for any office. And people and companies can donate cars, boats, property, helicopters, anything they want to anyone. Unlike in the States, there's no law against it. So it's no wonder, down here, the guy with the most money almost always wins. In fact, the candidates with the really big money down here actually hire first world advertising and marketing agencies out of Hollywood and Washington, D.C. In fact, last election, some of Clinton's top campaign organizers were seen making the rounds. That's why just a few days before the elections, the guys with the big money spend literally millions to buy votes. They rent buses and trucks and drive around the countryside handing out Domino's pizza, Happy Meals, sacks of rice and beans and flour and trinkets to all the indigenous folks coming in from the fields to vote. Now, don't get me wrong. There are really no strong-armed tactics at the voting booths at the polls themselves. Not like in Chicago. Instead, they just give out food and sacks of freebies to that voting segment of the population that's so poor that for them, a trip to a junk food restaurant is a rare treat. In fact, I know of one case in a mayoral election. The guy's been in office for something like 23 years, and he keeps getting voted in because about a week before elections, he has people drive around and hand every voter out in the boonies about $25. Now, of course, that's the last favor they ever get out of this guy for the next 4 years, but they do get their $25, and they remember that because it's a week before elections. So, generally in the big elections, like for senators and president, stuff like that, there'll be a handful of contenders with big, corrupt money behind them. Though, that's not to say a little guy, someone with almost no money at all, can't get on the ballot. Like in the U.S., it's all about the number of signatures you can get beforehand. So a person might go to a voting booth in Panama or Honduras or Guatemala and see maybe 6 or 7 guys running for president. But get this. In the districts and cities way out in the boonies, some of the races can be absolute free-for-alls. For example, I'm looking at an article talking about the race for mayor in a town called Jutiapa, way in the boonies. If you're a resident and you go into the ballot box there, you're going to be astounded. Because this year, get this, there are 104 people running for mayor. Yep, 104, and they're all on the ballot. And that's a municipality of about 150,000 people. So even though the little guy doesn't have a chance, he could still get on the ballot. You know, get that 15 minutes of fame. Now, let's change gears a bit and talk about some of the major frustrations gringos have when they first get down here. I don't care how bad or how good your Spanish is, you're going to have a very tough time dealing with pure Spanish speakers on the telephone. I guarantee you. Now, I admit I'm a dunce with languages, and it took me about 5 years before I was actually able to understand certain conversations people were having in elevators and escalators, even people walking down the street just having a little talk. And for me, anyway, there really did come that day when I said to myself, hey, I'm understanding these people. Wow. Then you'll have some bad days, too, where you think you've got brain damage or something because you don't understand anyone. And worse, every Latin country has its own accents. And some of the bigger Latin countries have variable accents, you know, just like the U.S., Canada, or the U.K. Not to mention, every country has their own slang terms, too, with some bleed over, of course. Which means, for example, if you're in Honduras and you're starting to pick up on what everybody's saying and you move to Bolivia, you just might not understand a damn thing when you're talking to people on the street. Though after a couple of months, you'll get back into the groove. So anyway, like I said, when you first get down here to Latin America, you're going to have one hell of a time learning to communicate with Spanish speakers on the phone. Of course, if you're stuck on the gringo tourist trail, Panama, Costa Rica, parts of Mexico, and now even parts of Ecuador, the big cities in Colombia, and most of Uruguay too, you'll soon realize that about every third or fourth person speaks a bit of English. Anyway, in 98% of the rest of Latin America, when you're well off the gringo tourist trail, you're going to need to phone people for basic services, and they're not going to speak English. Your bank will call, or your cleaning lady will call. You'll want to phone up your cell phone company, or your internet provider, or your bank, for whatever reason, to question your statement, or maybe it didn't come through on the internet. And for sure, like people all over the world, you'll be questioning your credit card statements. They'll be in Spanish, you know. And if you're like most gringos, you'll get a delivery of propane gas every once in a while, so you'll have to call up the delivery service and order a refill. On the phone, they'll ask you things like, do you have the valve on the top of your tank, or is it on the side? What size tank do you want? Is it cash or credit card? How are you going to answer that if your Spanish sucks? At first, you're not going to know what they're talking about. Then what? The first thing a green gringo or a language-dense person like me will do is look around for someone who can translate for you. Hopefully, they're in the room or nearby, or in the apartment next door. You grab anyone that speaks better Spanish than you and put them on the phone. That's the fallback position for most green gringos I know. And here's a common situation. When a first world gringo couple, be it husband or wife or significant others, first come down, it's always the case that one of the persons in that pair knows Spanish better than the other. Then, as time goes by, the one with the weakest Spanish will lean more heavily on the other to do that kind of stuff. You know, get on the phone, go pay bills, communicate with people knocking at the door, do the banking, talk to the mechanic. Meanwhile, that other person, having a crutch like that, often never really learns enough Spanish to do things completely on his own. Why? Well, he doesn't have to. Yes, I said he. Not the universal he, either. Men, they almost always lean on their better half, the woman, because she, as a rule, seems to be more diligent about learning Spanish or is more excited about learning it than her slightly resistant other. In fact, I can't tell you how many times I've been at an expat gringo's house, apartment, or hotel room. They'll be on the phone and suddenly they'll give me a helpless look and pass the phone over to me and say, "Johnny, please, can you handle this for me?" Seems like all new fresh gringo expats soon develop a kind of a stranded, helpless gringo look. That's what happens after a few tries with someone who speaks only Spanish on the other end of the phone. Believe me, I know that look. I had it for about 5 years myself. Now, some gringos cleverly compensate for this. I know one gringo lady who simply records all of her conversations like that. And when she's had enough frustration and hangs up, she listens to the same conversation over and over again till she basically gets it. Other gringos, for example, will call a bank or a cell phone company, catch about 50 or 60% of what the other person said, hang up, sit down for a while, think about it, then maybe have a shot at tequila, call back and go through the same thing again, hoping to piece together the rest of the conversation. And sometimes there'll be 3, even 4 callbacks in a row trying to talk to the same person. So definitely, when you're going to call anyone that you know is going to speak in Spanish to you, or someone calls you from the doctor's office or the car repair shop, whatever, always, always make it a point to get that person's name exactly before you even get on with the meat of the conversation. Now, it's not enough to get her first name, Maria, because you know there'll be 200 Marias working at the electric company. Get the full name, because if you have to call back, you want to speak to that same person. Believe me, you don't want to start from scratch with somebody else. Bottom line, when you're on the phone off the gringo tourist trail, there will not be an operator that'll say, "Press 1 for English." Though, if you're really stuck, you can say to the person on the other line, "Hay una persona hablas inglés," which means, "Is there someone there who speaks English? Por favor, please." Okay, changing gears again, let's talk about banks here in Latin America because, well, you all have to use them once you get down here. So, we have an email and it starts like this. "Hi, Johnny. Just thought your listeners might like to know a little about the crap you run into when doing business with banks here in Latin America. I'd like to say there are some very good banks here. I recall one particular time I needed to cash a $1,000 check at a bank called Banco Industrial. And note, I'm way off the gringo tourist trail. Anyway, I walked into the bank, up to the window, and the nice young lady said in perfect English, 'Hello, Captain Mango. How can I be of assistance to you today?' And you know, funny how she recognized me. I wasn't wearing my cape. Anyway, for your information, Banco Industrial cannot open an account for me in American Gringo as I am not a resident or citizen of this country. Yet. However, the tellers at this bank treat me as well or better than tellers do in the States. So then she said, 'Captain, would you like that in U.S. dollars or in the local funny money? And might there be anything else I could do for the captain?' Now, I do business in dollars and the local funny money. And the only bank down here that can open an account for me, a non-resident, in my name, is Banco Agromercantil, known by the letters BAM, BAM. Coincidentally, the same 3 big letters, BAM, BAM, you see when Captain Mango pulverizes a villain in the comic books. Easy enough to remember, even after one too many mango cocktails. So as far as the bank, BAM, I believe they're now the only bank nuts enough to file all that necessary paperwork to satisfy fat-ass Uncle Sam, I mean Fatka, and Uncle Sam and the effing IRS. Anyhow, I've been to more than a dozen different branches of the BAM Bank and literally done business more than 100 times with them. And guess what? Not once did I ever meet an English-speaking teller. Man, am I off the gringo tourist trail. I know what you're thinking. I gotta learn my Spanish, right? Well, I'm working on it. Actually, I'm working on a plan to ask one of these young, beautiful tellers to teach me Spanish, and of course, I'll teach her English. It should work. I mean, what woman doesn't want to go out with a superhero? Okay, so I've opened two checking accounts at this wonderful BAM Bank. One is a dollar account and the other a funny money account. Unfortunately, having had a temporary cash flow problem, my balance dropped below the free checking account amount. Do you think they would convert dollars to the funny money to deposit into my account to bring my balance up to the necessary level? No way, Jose. Nope, those morons couldn't be bothered to help me. However, I went to a different branch and played the stupid gringo act and got the desired results immediately. Yes, yet another clever superhero trick. On another occasion, I was unable to convert $70 into the local funny money because of a low balance. No entiende español was my reply to the fast-paced Spanish that was spewed at me after the teller counted my money five times, who then went away and returned with a supervisor. I finally said, más saldo, meaning, do I need a higher balance? And was given a resounding, sí, capitán, meaning I had to have a higher balance. So I thought, I'll fix these jerks. And that very same day, I returned to the same branch and deposited a check for $24,000. That's a lot of mangoes. Bam! Take that, you jerks, I thought to myself. Then I proceeded to whip out my $70 U.S. cash and asked it to be converted to the local funny money. The teller once again counted the cash five times and came to the same conclusion. He needed to speak to the manager. Once again, I was informed that I needed a larger balance to be able to think about having them handle this kind of major transaction. So as of now, I'm looking for ways so I don't have to bank at this house of half-wits, hair-lips, and jackasses. However, I should have known as I walked in the door that my superpowers were being drained. That happens every time I'm near a place that has any kind of ties to the USA. In fact, every time I see a picture of Uncle Sam with his crooked, bony, pointed finger, it's like crap tonight. Yes, I can feel the very mango juice being sapped from my veins. Anyway, Johnny, stay tuned for part two. Yes, as always, fighting a never-ending battle with deadly coconuts, and now, the occasional third-world institutional moron, yours truly, Captain Mango.
South of the border, down Mexico.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And don't forget to check out expatwisdom.com to sign up for your free reports on Latin America. See you next time. Nos vemos. She was a picture.